Good. What? Well, wait a minute. Did I hear a no? You can hear me. Okay, good. Okay. Good afternoon, as I said. Welcome to the department. This thing should be working now. Let's see whether that needs to work. No. Okay, let's start strong. Battery seems to be low. Haven't given a lecture in a while. Okay, well, I'll have to click here then, which is not ideal, but anyway. First of all, well, welcome to the department, as it says here. I haven't seen you yet, you haven't seen me yet. I wasn't here last week. So I wasn't at orientation. I think you've seen my colleague, Professor Sand. I'm the other linguistics professor currently in the department. We are currently only two linguistics professors. We are currently also in the process of appointing a third colleague who should be starting work in a year's time. I'll tell you a little bit more about that process later on, because there will be trial lectures and you will be not only very welcome, but in fact, it would be very important if you went to some of these lectures and gave feedback on whether you would like to be taught by these people or not. But that's in December, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that later on. My name is Sebastian Hoffman. I can be found in room 344 in the B building. This is all also on the web. You should also find my email address there, which is quite easy, hoffmann@uni-trier.de. And I have office hours, which are hardly ever used by first semester students. Okay. I don't know why. Okay. If you think that you need to talk to me for whatever reason relating to, you don't understand something in the course, or there is something which you have heard and feel can't be right, or whatever, this is where the office hours come in. Interesting. What is this? Okay. Please make use of them. Okay. You sign up for office hours on StudID. I'm assuming that all of you, or at least most of you, have by now got access to StudID, which is our online learning environment, and there you should be looking for, you can be looking for my name, and you will be then able to sign up for office hours. There are 10-minute slots on Wednesdays from 9 to 11. If for whatever reason you need more than 10 minutes, then we can arrange something outside these office hours. Okay. I just said now, when I sort of wanted to invite you to office hours, if you've heard something from somewhere else and you think it's a bit odd, maybe I can use this as a good reason to tell you that you should never really only listen to what your neighbor says. One of the main problems in the first 1 or 2 years, particularly 1 or 2 months, is that you hear rumors about what's required, and the colleague has heard of a colleague that this is what you have to do. Check it with, basically written sources if possible, or with people who should know. Okay, everyone should know, of course, but the experience shows that there's quite a lot of misinformation going around. Don't believe in rumors. Double check with information on the website or with your instructor or something like that. Okay. In the past, this has caused quite a bit of confusion, so that's why I'm saying it very prominently at the beginning of this lecture. Right, what's the plan for today? Lectures, as you now, I guess by now, know, are 1.5 hours, which is a long time. I usually try to have a sort of mini break, not a real 15 minute break, but some sort of sometimes 1 minute, sometimes 3 or 4 minutes break in the middle, where you're not invited to leave the room, but talk amongst yourself, or maybe there might be a little exercise sometime, just sort of that you get a breather, because 90 minutes is a very long time. It's also a very long time for the people talking in front of you. So that's what I plan to do usually in lectures. Maybe not today, because you don't get all that much linguistic information today. What you get today is the following. First, I'd like to motivate to you why we're doing linguistics, or what it is in the first place, and why it is important. Many of you will probably not have a very good idea of what linguistics is. Many of you will, at some stage, probably decide that, I don't need this, and I think, or at least I would like to convince you that this is wrong. I think you will need it. Okay? You as future teachers, you as future researchers in English or something, or whatever you might turn out to be. So I'd like to tell you a little bit more about what it is in the first place. And I'll do this by giving you a trailer, in a way. It's like a cinema. This room is actually, this lecture theatre is actually used for cinema. For cinema as well. This is where the big box comes in. This is a subwoofer. It's not 3D surround, but at least they've now got a better sound system. So it's going to be something like a teaser or a trailer, and that should give you an idea of what is to come for the rest of the semester. I'll also briefly mention what is language in a very general way, just basically to motivate why we're doing this. And then, of course, I have to do some admin. I have to tell you a few pieces of information about exams, although I won't even say anything about the day today. I don't want to scare you off. This is a long way down the road, but still. Now, I was going to start with linguistics straight away, but I need to change the plan slightly because I need to tell you at this stage about the book that we'll be using this semester and the following semester. And I'll do this now because you'll need to give me some information about whether you want this book or not. Well, it's not really a question of whether you want the book. This is the book that we're going to use. It's a thick book. It's a book we, as I said, use for the next two semesters. So in this lecture, Ling 101, and then also in the following semester in the 201 lecture that you will be attending, which is the follow-up of my lecture. It's called English Language. It has more than 40 chapters, which is much more than we're going to read. It's got more than 40 chapters on most of the important fields of linguistics, including some very, very basic chapters on, the basics of linguistics. This is what it looks like. It's not expensive. We used to have a very expensive book. We used to force students to buy a book that by now, and that's why we stopped, costs 129 euros. Yes, exactly. That was the reaction of the students. It wasn't 129 last year, but it was close. And even though it is for two semesters, we thought this is simply something that we can't do. So that's why we've now changed the book for the first time. This book costs 25.95. Much better, right? Now, why am I telling you all of this now? It's because we have a bookshop nearby. I don't know whether you've seen this. It's the bookshop called Stephanus in Trefft, which is close by. And when I contacted them a few weeks ago, they told me that the price is 32 euros. Okay. And I said, that's a shame, because that's more expensive than what you can get on Amazon. And that, of course, means that everyone is going to go and buy it from Amazon. You can still do this, but I would invite you, or I would like to suggest to you that you buy the book from Stephanus because we need a bookshop nearby the university, and we need to support them. They called me this afternoon, well, basically an hour ago, and said they recalculated, they managed, they made a few phone calls, etc. They're now willing to match the price from Amazon. Okay. But they are sort of committing themselves to something. I mean, they need high volume for that. And they also need some sort of confidence that the people who are going to buy the book and are going to tell me that they would like the book are actually going to turn up and buy the book. Okay. Otherwise, well, I guess they have too many of those books. And it's a good book, but still. So what I decided to do was to pass around this list, which should go around the whole lecture theatre during the next hour or so, which is basically a commitment to buy the book from them. Okay? It's entirely your choice whether you put your name down here or not. You can buy it from Amazon, you can buy it from any other bookshop that you want. But for the reasons that I've mentioned, I think it would be a good idea if you got it from Sheffield. I personally have no... I mean, there's no personal interest. I don't get any money from you buying anything there. It's just basically because I think it's an important thing that the university has a bookshop nearby. Okay, and they've made a great effort to match Amazon, so let's support them. That would be my suggestion. Okay, so I've got 199 lines on this handout. Can you please put your name and sort of sign? I mean, this is not a legal contract as such, but we need some sort of confidence that you're actually going to go and get the book. The books will be ordered on Monday, and they will be available, they said they should be available from Thursday onwards to pick up. There is no reading to do for next week, and then we have a holiday, so by the time we get back to regular procedure, you will then have the book. Okay? Does that sound like a deal? I'll hand this on. Please make sure that it actually goes around, because it would be a shame if it got lost. Let me make it clear also that the book, although in some cases it's very closely linked to the lecture, does not replace the lecture. This is partly additional reading, partly parallel reading. There will be some things that are in the book which I'll be mentioning in the lecture, but sometimes it will be actually quite different. And I expect you to know both of what's in the book and what I've said in the lecture. Okay? For every week, there is a schedule. I mean, for every week there will be a reading assignment, a manageable reading assignment. And this will be on a schedule which I will upload this afternoon on StudIP. I haven't brought any copies, but it will be available for you to download from the website. I will not announce readings. I will simply assume that you look at the schedule and say, oh, I need to read chapter 7 for next week, and do it. I won't check. You're adults. I mean, this, yeah, you need to know whether you want to do it or not. Right, I'll get back to some practical issues later on, but I'd like to get back to linguistics first. What is linguistics? Why do we study it? Why is it interesting? Etc., etc. If you look it up in a dictionary, you might get a definition like the scientific study of natural language. Okay? You might get a longer definition like language is the most fundamental human capacity. As such, studying language is one avenue for studying the workings of the human mind. So we actually, by studying language, seem to have some sort of door to our mind, these people claim. Linguists are interested in language for its own sake, as well as in what the study of language can tell us about the mind, and in how an understanding of the true nature of language can inform practical issues such as language teaching, future teachers, okay, the treatment of language disorders, and language policy. This is particularly important here. I mean, this is quite a claim. The most fundamental mental human capacity. Think about it. What do you do, or what would you do, without language? if you didn't have language. Many of our daily activities are carried out with language. Most of the time we are not aware of language we are using, of the language we're using. The study of language is interesting. Okay, don't worry, I'm not going to read off all the slides. This is just a nice long quote here. The study of language is interesting because it is important for our relationships, for managing our daily life, for our study, and for doing things together. The study of linguistics helps us to become more aware of our use of language. It assists greatly in the learning and teaching of languages. Okay. Maybe all of this sounds fairly, well, on the one hand, basic and also abstract, but many of you will be interested in English literature. That's one of the reasons why you're here, I assume. Okay. How does language create meaning? Style. What's special about a particular author's style? You will have heard about metaphors and other sort of literary mechanisms of creating a particular meaning or style or effect. How does that work? Why does it work? What is special about Shakespeare in terms of language? And what do we need to know in order to interpret literary meaning through language? Okay, as I said, I'd like to give you a bit more detail about what you're going to face by way of a small, short trailer. What do you eat with... Well, I don't know, how do you pronounce this? Goatee? Any other way to pronounce this? Yeah?
Well, it's fish, it's kind of a joke.
It's kind of a joke, you're absolutely right. Yes. The answer is chips. Yeah? Why? This is fish. Yeah? It's a joke, as you're absolutely right, but it makes a point. If we take the GH from love, the O from women, and the TI from nation, then the word fish can be pronounced fish, right? Obviously not. Yeah? Okay. But this kind of fact seems to suggest that English spelling is, well, at least odd, if not, I don't know, there are no rules, how can that make sense? Well, the point is it doesn't make sense, and it couldn't be. Yeah? Everyone got the fish, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Right. This is impossible. There cannot be such a word. At least not in English. Maybe in other languages where different rules apply. For example, there's a rule that there isn't a word that starts with GH that is pronounced. We have GH pronounced like this, but not at the beginning of words, not at the beginning of syllables. So clearly, there are rules. There are, in fact, quite a lot of rules, and we're not going to cover all of them. For example, there are some languages. Are there any speakers of Vietnamese in here? Okay. You have lots of words starting in hmm, right? Yes. Okay. In fact, it's a Vietnamese name as well, isn't it? Oh, is that? Yeah. It doesn't exist in English at the onset of a syllable. Words cannot start with hmm. Have you heard of the words lack, like? No, they don't exist. But they could exist in English, but just simply don't. Have you heard of the words spwond, splenk, and kropik? Of course, neither have you heard of these, but you couldn't possibly find them in English. The first two you could. The others you couldn't. Because they do not conform to the rules of English. Now things like this, and much more, okay, the sort of rules of the sounds, well not the spellings as such, we'll first do a bit on spelling, but then the rules of the sounds of language as such, but also of English in particular, is what we're going to talk about in phonetics and phonology. This is something we'll do at the beginning, fairly at the beginning, in week 4 and 5. So phonetics and phonology is the area of linguistics that deal with the scientific study of speech processes, how we produce sounds, where we produce sounds, what kinds of sounds are produced, and then the study of the sound system of a language. It's not the same. English does not have the same sounds as Vietnamese or German or other languages. And it's a system, or if the same sounds are available, they may not be used in the same combinations. So that's the first major topic that we're going to cover. Do you know Humpty Dumpty? Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall, and Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. How many words are there in the last two lines? As lay people, we have a very basic idea of what a word is, and we kind of know what a word is. But if you start thinking about it, it's not quite as clear as that. You've already mentioned one point. Couldn't, is that one word or two? It's, if I had spelled it, could not put Humpty together again, you would have had absolutely no problems counting this as two words. Couldn't, well, orthographically it's one word, but does that actually make it one word? We could come up with a sort of computer-like or some with a very mechanical definition and say how many sequences of non-white space characters, okay? And then it would be clear. Then it would be, I forget now which number it is, but this is a clear-cut definition of what a word is. And then couldn't would be one word. You could also say how many different word forms. We have the word all twice. We have king twice. We have the twice. These are obviously the same words, so they are repeated. Do we count them each time, or do we count types? Depends on the definition of word. We've already talked about couldn't. We could also say a word is just what we find in a dictionary. I could go on about this, and I will go on about this in morphology. It's not the only thing I'm going to go on about, but the definition of what a word is and what the individual parts of words, of the words are. So the identification and analysis and description of the structure of words. How words are formed, how new words are formed, and what the individual parts are, and whether these parts have characteristics that can be grouped together. And in that connection, we will come back to this apostrophe S and look at whether that's the same kind of thing that's attached to a word as the contracted not. Let's get back to Humpty Dumpty. Poor Humpty Dumpty, right? Fell, couldn't be put together again. Here is an extract from the BBC website, BBC News, and this might be too small for you to read, so I will read it for you. Nursery rhyme violence tops TV. Nursery rhymes expose children to far more violent incidents than an average evening watching TV, researchers say. A Bristol Royal Hospital for Children team found the frequency of nursery rhyme violence was more than 10 times greater than the pre-9pm programmes. The tongue-in-cheek study examined 25 popular rhymes, archives of disease in childhood reported. Examples of violent incidents included Humpty Dumpty being hurt in a fall and Jack and Jill tumbling down a hillside. The researchers admit their study was not entirely serious, but they say it does make the point that blaming television for increasing levels of violence is too simplistic. The researchers gathered data from TV regulator Ofcom on depictions of violence over a two-week period, etc., etc., etc. Now, this, of course, is tongue-in-cheek. It's not serious. But the point was made that there's violence, and there's violence that is communicated through language. I found something which is no longer available on the web, and this was, as I said, only partly serious, but you can see the connection. I found this, well, let's see whether it's funny or not, but I found this explanation. Actually, it makes sense. This was a comment on this report. Humpty is a blatant sexual reference. Okay? I'll leave it up to you to work this out. Dumpty is street slang for excrement. Sat on a wall. This is an obvious reference to the psychedelically inspired movie or album by Pink Floyd. I don't know whether you still remember Pink Floyd or know Pink Floyd. Many, if you don't, look it up. But 70s, I guess. Okay. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. This is continuing reference to the experience one might have of crashing after partaking in illegal substances. All the king's horses and all the king's men. Phrasing of this statement suggests a relationship between the two parties mentioned, the undertones of which could be evocative of bestiality. It's really bad, isn't it? And you need to help me with this one. I never found out what this means. Couldn't put Humpty back together again. Something so nasty and profane I can't post it here. Still haven't worked it out. If you know, please let me know. Yep. This is clearly no good for children. Such filth. Now, obviously, this is, again, not serious or not real. But it makes a point. Humpty Dumpty is made up of words. These words have meaning. In fact, sometimes longer stretches of words have meaning. Units. We have units of meaning that go beyond a single word. And for many words, we know, we all know, of what we consider a primary meaning, the dictionary meaning maybe. But then this is only one type of meaning. This is what we will be calling the referential meaning. But there are also all sorts of connotations or sort of lexical, I don't know, reverberations or whatever you want to call this, where we actually can read something into words or have connotations. These words have connotations. And they may then evoke things, also in the literary text, of course, that are not part of the core meaning, but are still clearly there. Now, this is one part, just one part, but one part of semantics. the study of meanings in language. This is something that we will be dealing with about halfway through the semester. The fact that language can influence children or can influence human beings is quite obvious, there is something behind this, and in fact this Humpty Dumpty story, some people took it serious. Right? This is again from 2009, I think again from the BBC. Humpty Dumpty given a happy ending by politically correct BBC. Well, in that case, it's probably not from the BBC website, but it's from a British website. The BBC was yesterday accused of outrageous political correctness after changing the words in a nursery rhyme on the children's show. CBBS programme, Something Special, altered the words to Humpty Dumpty and gave it a more cheerful ending. Instead of being unable to put Humpty together again, the new version claimed all the king's horses and all the king's men made Humpty happy again. How nice. I very much doubt that any child has in the slightest bit been traumatised by Humpty Dumpty or any other age-old nursery rhyme, said John Midley of the Campaign Against Political Correctness. It is an unnecessary and outrageous place of political correctness directed at young children. This is serious, okay? This is not a joke. This is one of the examples where we can see that language, people feel about language, feel strongly about what is possible with language, how language can be used to, or abused to do things. Okay? Political correctness is mentioned here. I presume you have heard about political correctness. You can't say nigger anymore. Of course. Yeah? And in fact, if I was in an American lecture theatre, I probably wouldn't dare mention the word in the first place, because just simply mentioning the word is already so bad that you're probably going to be chucked out of the university. I don't know. Today we're talking about African Americans. There are good reasons for this. There are no longer any firemen around. We only have firefighters. This one is not so much in use, but some people want to take this to extreme and say blind, that's not good. We need to have visually challenged. Some people talk about short people who are vertically challenged. Again, so quite clearly there is something about language which goes beyond the sort of boring lexical meaning. There's something that we do with language. Language is part of our society, and there are various ways in which we can use language to do things. I can use language to insult someone, of course. If I point to someone and say, "You are an idiot," then I've insulted that person. Have I? Well, it depends. If I am the director of a theatre performance, and we're doing a play which has a number of idiots, plus, I don't know, the king and the queen and the princess or whatever, I can say, "You're the king, you're the queen, you're an idiot, you're an idiot, and you're an idiot." Have I insulted them? No. The same words that I used in a different context mean something completely different. I suggest that you see a psychiatrist immediately. Again, this can be an insult. Said by a doctor, it might not be conceived as an insult. So quite clearly, context is everything. Given the right context, anything can mean anything, really. And it's interesting that we can still understand each other. Can I show you a sexist joke without you suing me? it makes a point which fits in here. It's an old saying by Voltaire, apparently. But it makes that point very nicely. And I warn you, it's a sexist joke because I don't want to give the impression that I am sexist. But you have to be careful because you have to be not only PC, but, well, anyway. When the diplomat says yes, he means perhaps. When he says perhaps, he means no. When he says no, he is not the diplomat. Yeah? When a lady says no, she means perhaps. When she says perhaps, she means yes. And if she says yes, she's not a lady. Now, it basically makes the point, in the right context, the same words can mean very different things, also for different types of people, of course. So, context and meaning interact. You are an idiot, well, it depends on the context. Now, of course, there are sort of default interpretations. An unlikely interpretation that you are an idiot is not an insult, but it is possible. When we're talking about things like this, we're in the area of pragmatics. Study of the aspects of meaning and language use that are dependent on the speaker, the addressee, and other features of the context of the utterance. We'll do this towards the end of the semester. Is it really true that you can't say the word nigger anymore? Again, it depends, and in this case, of who you are, or on who you are. This is from an interview with the magazine Rolling Stone. I wasn't the biggest nigger in the world. I couldn't beat everyone, or everybody, but my rep superseded me, etc. This is spoken by a African-American, North American. Clearly, in context, said by the right person, this seems to be okay. In fact, you can even say this to your friend, and then it's not an insult, but then it's just basically a way to show belonging to the same kind of ethnic group, but also maybe in group of teenagers. Again, context, this is a different type of context. This has got to do with social context. Are very important in language use. Who uses the word lovely in British English? Most frequently? What's your impression, or your, not impression, but what do you think?
The Queen.
The Queen! Okay, I'm not sure about the Queen specifically, but what's characteristic of the Queen? Is she male? Is she female? Is she young? Is she old? Or elderly? Is it young boys? Or young men? Or young girls? Or whatever? Or what is it? It's.
I would say old women.
Yeah, elderly ladies. That's the. You see, there is a difference between old women and elderly ladies. Yeah. You could say that they've got the same reference, but it's not got the same meaning. Yeah? These are the kind of things that we'll be discussing in semantics. Now, if you want to answer this question, you can ask native speakers. Is there a native speaker of English in the audience? You? Okay. Good. It's always good to have a native speaker in the audience because, and another one. Okay. Yes, you can put your hands up. It's all right. I don't. Okay. Good. Because occasionally it might be very handy to have a native speaker to confirm a few things. Because you have intuitions about language that non-native speakers may not have to that extent. But your intuitions may also be wrong because they are your own intuitions and you are not a lawyer, a coal miner, a whatever, the Queen. So in linguistics we use large collections of data, so-called corpora. For example, there's the British National Corpus, which is a collection of 100 million words of British English from, well, the present day or sort of the end of the last century, which is a unique snapshot of the English language. And we look at this and try to describe what's going on and then thereby look at or get at information that may not be available to the introspection-based information provided by native speakers, no matter how native they are. This is very often, in fact, more reliable, which doesn't mean that I think that we don't need native speakers, but their judgment may not always be right. Right in the sense that they say something about what general language use is. Okay. This is what is dealt with in corpus linguistics. In fact, there isn't going to be a lecture on corpus linguistics because we have one day off in 2 weeks' time on Friday. There was going to be a lecture on corpus linguistics before. This will be postponed to a later stage in your studies. You are going to be confronted with corpus linguistics at some stage because that's one of the main methods that we use in this department. If you look up the use of lovely in a corpus like this, then you can see that the frequency per million words, which means that, let's take a million words, then you're likely to find around 779 instances in elderly people, or spoken by elderly people, and much fewer by young people. In fact, that can be nicely visualized like this. And if you then combine this also with male-female, the male-female distinction, then you will see, yes, it is the elderly women who produce this. This is something where the corpus can confirm our intuitions, but often you find things that are actually quite different from what you expect. What we're talking about here is language variation, or social linguistics. So the way in which language depends on who you are, where you come from, how old you are, what cultural norms you have, what expectations you have, etc. And context, of course, again. This will not be covered this term, but this is going to be covered next. Do sentences grow on trees? Well, kind of. Yes. Mm-hmm. Let's look at the sentences grow on trees. Is that the same thing as grow sentences trees on? Obviously not. We've shuffled the words and one is structured okay and the other one isn't. That's primitive. Basic. But this is the case because some parts seem to belong together while others don't. On trees, for example, belongs together. You say on trees and not trees on. There are languages where you say the same things in the structure trees on. They don't have prepositions, they have postpositions. Okay. But in English, it's on trees, and that forms some sort of unit. It's not a word, but it's a syntactic unit. And in fact, we can say grow on trees is also a unit which contains a smaller unit. So there seem to be some hierarchies in sentences. In fact, this can be quite nicely visualized in a tree. We can first assign word classes, noun, verb, preposition, and another noun. And we can then say that they are grouped in phrases, and they then are combined to make a clause, and in this case, a whole sentence. And this can be nicely shown in a tree. Don't worry, we will not be drawing trees in this lecture. I will be showing you trees, and you will be expected to understand them, to read trees. But you don't need to draw them in the sense of extensively being able to do this. If you can do it, it will help. Okay. This is when we're doing syntax. The study of the principles and rules for constructing sentences in natural language. Can you read this sentence? Or this one? Yeah? You needed to read them twice, right? Or maybe even three times. Why? Because they're so-called garden path sentences, where sort of your brain leads you down the wrong path in the garden, and then you realize, oh, can't get out here, I need to retrace my steps, and then go the other way. And this has to do with structure that we assign to these sentences, apparently, quite naturally. On the basis of what? This is an interesting question. So, the old man, we seem to intuitively want to make this into a unit. And then we realize, oh, man is a verb. Okay. And then it makes more sense. So we seem to have expectations which are based on, I don't know, maybe frequencies or on, I don't know what. It's interesting because that's where linguistics can then be used to be a brain and a window into our brain, okay? Because we seem to process things in different ways. Yeah? Our brain seems to have a preference for making sense of sentence structure, okay? And if it's different, then we are thrown off. Those of you who have an iPhone may know Siri, or will know Siri. Those of you who don't have an iPhone will still probably know Siri. Call me an ambulance. And then Siri answers, from now on, I will call you an ambulance. Okay? Which is a problem. This is kind of funny, well, unless you really need an ambulance, but it's also a syntactic misunderstanding. Can you it's bad to explain jokes, but can you explain the joke? Well, really only if you know the relevant terminology to talk about complementation patterns and ditransitive verbs and things like that. Whether you want to do this is a different question, but the point I'm going to make is that this might even help you to make sense of a literary piece of work. Why does the author play with these kind of ambiguous meanings, etc.? And how is it affected? Okay? Does silence mean anything? That was the end of syntax. We're now moving to a different field. In fact, you're going to get quite a bit of syntax. You're going to get four lectures on grammar and syntax. It's going to be fun. I like syntax. Okay. What does silence mean? God, isn't this picture awful if you're in a museum? What does silence mean? Disagreement. I'm getting cracked. Silence clearly means agreement. So, observation number one, silence seems to be meaningful, or at least can be meaningful. Why is this the case? Well, because A says something, and we expect that once A says something, then there should be an answer, or some sort of B should take over. This is how communication works. If I ask you a question, then I expect you to answer. If you don't answer, then something must be wrong. Maybe my question, or maybe something else, I don't know. Or you don't know the answer, in which case silence might mean I don't know the answer. But clearly, there are expectations which are opened up by the first part here. A And the fact that the second part is not provided is then interpreted. In a way, this is also pragmatics, of course. But it also has to do with the fact that our communication, that the way we talk to each other, is structured in this case, pairs very often. We have questions and responses. This is trivial, but it's an important point. We have a greeting which is expected to be followed up by a greeting. And since we know, and since we learn from the very early stages on, when you're a baby and all you can do is babble, then your caregiver or caretaker, which is the more PC term for mother nowadays, or father, is practicing this kind of turn-taking with you. The baby will say something or scream or whatever, and then the mother or the father might immediately respond to this, and maybe even at this very early stage, we are conditioned for this kind of exchange. And knowledge about this seems to have an influence on how we interpret what's going on in conversation. Notice also, and you can do this when you're a group of yours, maybe after the lecture you talk to each other, try to see whether more than one person is talking at the same time. And you will be quite surprised that, yes, it does happen, but it's only really a very, very small proportion of all conversation, all of the conversation. How does this work? Why does everyone, even if you're 5, 6, or 7 people talking to each other, how do you know whose turn it is to talk? How is this organized? This is what we're talking about in conversation or discourse analysis. What's the difference between skirt and shirt? Time. Some puzzled faces, yes. Yeah. Why? Well, both go back to the same origin. It's the same word. It's just that they came in different ways to the British Isles. Sure, presumably ended the British Isles with the Anglo-Saxon and Jutes. These are the peoples who moved to Britain in the 5th century, or 4th, 5th, 6th century, or 5th century. And skirt was brought over at a later stage by the Vikings, but it goes back to the same Germanic origin. Lots of words that start with sk are of Scandinavian origin. When we're talking about things like this, we're talking about historical linguistics. We're not doing this in this semester. This is something that you'll be hearing about in the second semester. Here, for example, we're concerned with the etymology or the history of the words, or the study of the development of the words. And there are interesting examples. Knight versus knave, or very interesting, silly versus zeely. It's the same word. It means something rather different in English. Okay? That was the trailer to give you an idea of some of the fields of linguistics that you will be covering this semester, and then also some in the next semester. And I'd like to end this trailer with a brief observation or brief definition again of language, which will lead over to the next lecture. I'm not finished yet, so don't start packing up. By Sapir, who wrote An Introduction to the Study of Speech back in 1921. Language is a purely human and non-instinctive method of communicating ideas, emotions, and desires by means of a system of voluntarily produced symbols. These symbols are in the first instance auditory, and they are produced by the so-called organs of speech. Okay. Why am I showing this to you? Well, I'll come back to the produced by the so-called organs of speech in the phonetics lecture. But before that, we are going to talk about the question whether language is purely human. In the next lecture, I would like to talk about the properties of human language, and I would like to compare the language of humans, or the communication of humans, with the communication between animals. Because that might give us some hints as to what is specific or special about human language. I will also then use this to introduce you to some key concepts in linguistics that you will hear throughout the course of your academic career. But now I need to get back to some practical information. I'd like to make the point that this is a lecture for absolute beginners. I know that there are people in this lecture theatre who are not absolute beginners. That's fine. Just don't expect that. I mean, the large majority are first semester students, and this is for absolute beginners. Just to make sure that there are no misunderstandings. Which doesn't mean that it's always going to be dead easy. Yeah? So, I mean, there's quite a lot of information, but I'm trying to pick you up from, well, basically a beginner level. This is a required class for a number of degree schemes. BA English Language, Linguistics and Literature as a major, also as a minor, and B.Ed. English, including Realschule Plus. Can I just have a show of hands? Who is B.A. English Language and Linguistics Linguistics and Literature major? Okay, quite a few. Okay, who's a minor? Ah, that's quite a few as well. Okay, and who is B.Ed. Gymnasium? Yes, as expected, that's the majority. And who is Realschule Plus? Okay, very few. Yeah, that's sort of kind of what I expected. Yeah. Now, as I said, you're going to get a lot of information. It's not going to be, it's supposed to be basic and introductory, but I'm going to bombard you with quite a lot of information. In fact, the lecture format is not ideal for this. It would be much better if we had classes of 20 or 30 people where we could do this much more interactively and actually do some exercises as well. The problem is just that there are too many of you. I mean, we're happy that you're here, but we can't run 10 parallel courses in the first semester. So that's why we decided to run this as a lecture. It's not ideal, but it's what we can do. In order to make up for the fact that it's not ideal in the sense that I do all the talking and you sit and listen, there will be tutorials. In fact, there will be 4 tutorials. They're not compulsory. They're highly recommended. They can be used to ask questions. There will be weekly exercises. I will make these weekly exercises available for everyone. I will also give you solutions to those exercises. But it may be helpful to do them in a group together with other students under supervision and guidance from a student who has been to this lecture and has done well. You can also use the tutorials to give me feedback. You can give me feedback directly, I have no problems with that. If you think that the way you described this or explained this, sorry, there's hardly anyone in the lecture theatre who understood this, let me know. I don't mind. If that's the case, then you need to complain. You can also complain or say positive things, if you'd like, to the tutorial teachers. It's a way, I will ask them, did you hear anything? Did people generally understand what I say? So keep them informed. They are taking place from Monday to Thursday, from 6 to 7 in the evening. one each. If you want to attend any of these tutorials, you need to sign up for them. This sign up is possible in a very limited time frame, in a window of only a few days. Next week, 21st to the 23rd of October only. You can then still sign up later, but it'll mean that I'll have to manually enter your matriculum number, etc. And please do it yourself, okay? If I have to do this 100 times, then that's not nice. Okay. Highly recommended, but not obligatory. You will also have been told about credit points, Leistungspunkte. And you know that one credit point is supposed to be equivalent to about 30 hours of work. And your presence counts as work. Okay? So you get credit for sitting here and listening. You also get credit points for preparation, meaning reading. Now those of you who are BA majors and BA minors, you get more credit points for this lecture than those of you who are BAs. It's the same lecture, but because you're in a different degree scheme and because you're expected to specialize perhaps to a slightly greater degree, or at least you're doing less work in other areas, we need to make up for this by giving you some extra work. There will be some extra reading. This will be announced as the term progresses. There will also be an assignment. The deadline will be sometime in about 6 or 7 weeks, so I will announce this when the time draws closer. This is what we call an STS assignment, Study and Transferable Skills. This is supposed to cover things that you need to know anyway. In our case, in this lecture, it's going to be a library exercise. I know that you're also doing a library exercise with the Sprachpraxis. I'll try to do this in a way that you're not doing the same thing, but I will be asking you to do things that are specific to linguistics in particular, the kind of tasks that you need to perform when you might be doing research in linguistics. And then there is a second assignment towards the end of the semester, but that's only for BA students, in a sense, only obligatory for BA students. BA students are very welcome to do this and to submit it, and you will then also get feedback. This is a good preparation for the exam, because there will be an exam. There will be an exam at the end, not immediately at the end. In fact, it will be, I know the date already, but I haven't put it down on the slides. It's towards the end of the semester break, if I'm not mistaken. But rather than telling you a date now, I'd like to double check this. And there's plenty of time. You shouldn't worry too much about exams at the moment. This will be an exam if you're doing, if you're a major or an M.Ed, a B.Ed student, that covers literature and ELT as well. Now, I think you've probably been informed about this already, but I'll mention it anyway. The final grade does not count towards your degree. Have you been told about this? No, okay. Or yes, I don't know. The final grade will not feed into the average of the final degree that you will get after 3 years. We've done this because the results of the first exam are often not as good as we hope them to be. In fact, a far too great proportion of students have not managed to pass in the past. I'm not trying to scare you off, but I'd like to mention this at the beginning. Which means that it is very difficult for those students to get a good average grade in the end. And that's why we thought, this is a lecture, and the three lectures are a lot of information to take in at the beginning. You need to pass, but the grade is irrelevant. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't have to learn for the exam. It doesn't mean that you don't have to take this lecture seriously. Because it is not, apparently, it is not necessarily easy to pass this exam. It's a fair exam. It's nothing. It's not rocket science. But you don't need to worry about getting a bad grade. But you need to pass. I'll tell you more about the exam as time goes by. The lectures are being recorded. Actually, I'm silly. I should have turned this the other way around because I'm not recording you, I'm recording myself. But anyway, next time I'll remember. The slides are being recorded. The slides and the audio are being recorded together. And they will then be put up on the web, well, in the local university network. And there will be a link to the lecture, both the audio and the slides, that will be made available on the student page. I assume you know by now how to log in to student page. So in other words, Friday afternoon, 2 to 4, you don't have to be here. You're very welcome to be here. I like you. I mean, yes. But you don't have to be. You can listen to the to the audio and see the slides. You can't see me, but I guess that's not really important. At any time, you can also re-listen to the lecture. And students have found this useful. We're doing this because there are a few students who can't attend this lecture because there are clashes with other departments. So that's why we decided to record this. It also means that if you are here, then that's a sign for me that you want to be here. Which is also the same as saying that you listen to me, okay? And do not talk amongst yourself. There have been, in previous years, there have been some problems with people being disturbed by fellow students, particularly in the upper regions of this room. I don't hear this very well, but the people in front of you do. I have had to take some drastic measures which really aren't university style. Once I actually asked the three last rows to come to the first three rows. I said, where are we? Okay, this is a university. It helped, it was a very quiet lecture. If you're here, you listen, please. Okay. I don't have to hear a pin drop, but to be able to do this. And I understand that once you might sort of might ask a quick question or so, but don't interpret this to be the place to have a discussion about anything really. Okay? Shall we agree on that? I don't mind whether you're here or not. As I said, I like it when you're here, but when you're here, you're here. Okay. This, by the way, is an interesting sentence. When you're here, you're here. Well, obviously, right? Yeah? When you are here, you're here. This is nonsense. Why should I repeat this? But you have all understood what I mean by this. Yeah. Right. Something completely different before I let you off a bit earlier. Not yet. Do you play instruments? Do you like singing? We have a Collegium Musicum at the university. Don't laugh, it's serious matter. We're doing nice stuff. We're always welcoming new members. We particularly, I'm not finished yet, there will be more linguistics. We particularly need strings. If you play the violin, if you play the cello, it's a really nice place to meet people. We are a great conductor. We're doing Beethoven and South American pieces. Our conductor is from Argentina. So, please consider that. And to finish off, I would like to tell you a little story. I would like to tell you a children's story. I've already told you about Humpty Dumpty, and it's something along the same lines. It's not because I consider you to be children or because I want to insult you with language or anything, but because I found this story a long time ago when my first son was still very young, and I think it has relevance for a number of linguistic questions as well. And I'd like to end this lecture by telling you this story. And this is a story of brain cell. Brain cell was so brainy, he talked in riddles and rhyme. When people tried to solve them, it took up lots of time. If a door is ajar, can a jar be a door? Do waves wave goodbye when they leave the seashore? Can you tie a rainbow? I see some puzzled faces. Or see a moonbeam? Can you eat jellyfish? Well, some people do. My wife loves jellyfish. Or hear ice cream? I'm now not telling you which area of linguistics this refers to. That would be killing things. So I'll leave it up to you to interpret this. Do snowmen dress up to dance at snowballs? Will the pleasure boat trip when the water falls? Will the bread run out? When the butterflies? Can you see the sunflower? Or eat magpies? Does a dog fish? Does a cowslip? Can a horse fly? Or a sheep dip? You might need to look up some of these words, but. Brain cell told them all, each person and creature. They could learn these things if he told them, sorry. They could learn these things if he was their teacher. Bat said, fantastic. Bug said, oh, great. Aardvark and zebra said, you've got a date. So they sat in his classroom and all called him prof. And he talked, till they all nodded. So, see you next week.